we go. I'm Over It. That's the name of the song. That's the name of that tune, considering the holidays. They're way, way behind us now, and we are back. Welcome back to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and our usual cast of characters. We'll have both sports writers, Mike Grenier and Steve Krause, as a guest this evening. And it's kind of, no agenda tonight. Tim, I got nothing. I mean, I don't have any. I'm fresh out of ideas. I'm happy that the holidays are over, to be truthful with you, and looking forward to the rest of the year. I just want to mention one thing, Tim. Oh, by the way, welcome and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Well, thank you, sir. All right.
It seems like the exact same year, because you started off with technical difficulties, so nothing really changes in the new year.
Oh, boy, you know how to hurt a guy. Oh, my God. Yeah, that's the truth, man. It follows me everywhere. Yeah, I'm pretty inept at this, so anytime we can get it out there, I'm pretty happy. I just want to, one thing that came to mind trivia-wise, Tim, you know, the college championship is tonight, the national championship, and it's Washington versus Michigan. Any two Patriot quarterbacks you can remember associated with those schools?
Washington? No. Michigan? Some late-round draft choice named Brady.
Yeah, there you go. I believe Drew Bledsoe played for Washington.
No, he played for Washington State.
Same thing, only different. It's out there. Was it Washington State, really? I thought it was Washington. Okay.
Yep.
All right, well, that, so I don't... Do you have a dog in the fight in this one?
No, I'd like to see Washington win, though. Just to watch, you know, Harbaugh squirm.
I know that.
You know, they always seem to find a way to screw it up. But I've always liked Washington as a team. Don't follow them religiously, but. You know, when I'm looking at scores from out west, I'm always interested to see how they're doing. It always seems like they're a really classy team. They play hard. They bring it every game. And when you watch them on TV, they're a joy to watch. They get talented kids out there on the West Coast, and there are a lot of teams that are competing for them, especially nowadays with Oregon and Oregon State. Entering the fray on the upper echelons, but they're always there in the fight, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that game is probably getting underway in about 24 minutes or so, and we got the Bruins.
8 o'clock.
What's that?
An 8 o'clock. Start.
8 o'clock. All right. So the coverage starts at 7:30, and we got the Bruins and the Celtics both tonight. All right, Tim. So where is your sports mind right now?
I'm not focusing on Bill Belichick as much as everybody else. There's been a lot of chatter all season long. Belichick last year, and of course, as the poor season progressed, Belichick's got to go. And I just got real tired of it. You know, he has another year in his contract, so he's going to have to... If Kraft wants him gone, he's going to have to fire him. Unless Bill wants to go and says, yeah, okay, you know, we'll just call it quits. We'll call it amicable. And a no-fault divorce. I'll leave. And he'll get a nice payout from Kraft, of course. If he has to fire him, he probably wouldn't give him that nice payout.
Well, he said this morning, Belichick said this morning, I'm under contract. I'm under contract for another year. So, if he gets fired, I imagine he gets paid, too.
You know, that's just to piss off the reporters. They all know he's got another year. But they've all been saying, you know, they've all been speculating all year long, writing their columns, getting people to follow them, you know, in print or on radio. Belichick, time to go, da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, his time is up the last 3 or 4 years. Well, you know... Someone was making a comment yesterday, and they were saying, when Tom Brady left the Pats, he went to a Tampa Bay team that was stacked, and it was. It was stacked offensively. It was stacked defensively, and he should have won a Super Bowl. And they went to the playoffs the next year, too. Things didn't work out. Didn't always work out with the Pats, but we went to the Super Bowl 9 times, which, to me, a lot of people seem to have forgotten. You know, and they won 6 of them, and they just barely lost the other 3. And it was Brady, certainly. It was also Belichick who kept getting the players to put around Brady. And yeah, the pickings haven't been the best, but we didn't always have the best draft choices available to us because we kept winning, and so you always ended up with the 32nd pick in the draft at the end of every round. You got a pick. That's why he was always trading back and forth, trying to increase the draft structure, but he also backloaded to get 4th, 5th, and 6th rounders who were extremely athletic, but more importantly, they were academics. They were smart ball players. They could learn. They could be taught, and that's what Belichick did so well. Last couple of years, not for anything, and not to the mean guys, but they're not the smartest players. You can't keep making the kind of mistake that these guys have made week in and week out, not learning the system, not getting it down, that's impacted the team negatively throughout the season, over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, you know, those are all good points. And I got to tell you, Tim, I'm not even upset about the way that this season has gone. Because, you know, I go back to 1960. So we had 40 rough years. We had 20 great, great years. And I've never, you know, in all my years on this planet, seen any stretch of excellence like that in any sport other than the NHL, the NFL with the Patriots. Nobody else has done that. Not the Yankees, not the Celtics, not the Montreal Canadiens. You know, it's 20 seasons of sustained excellence. I enjoyed that. Now, let me tell you what I enjoyed about yesterday's game, Tim. And my wife got really angry with me. I said, at the end of the game, I said, look at these Jets players. Look at them. Look at them. They're having so much fun. They did it. They beat the curse. Do you remember when the Patriots used to do Snow Angels? Do you remember what that felt like? That's what these guys felt like. And I hate to say it, Tim, but I enjoyed it.
A lot of that was despite the Patriots on their home field. And I didn't realize this till this morning, that they went for 2 on that touchdown in the last 2 minutes. They went for the 2 points.
Yep.
It didn't matter to them.
Yep.
If they scored 16 or 17 points, but it was a stick it in Bill Belichick's face. Ha ha. Last touchdown of the season.
Absolutely.
We put a 2-point conversion.
Yes, sir.
Face.
Yes, sir. And you know what? We've been on the other side of that coin. So I'm telling you, I watched that game and I'm a Patriots fan, but I'm thinking, these guys work hard. They worked as hard as Patriots players do or anybody else. And they went through that curse. They weren't being embarrassed by, you know, the New England juggernaut for 8 years. And they pulled one out. And I got to tell you, I enjoyed seeing how happy they were.
I don't recall Bill ever going for 2 points on a touchdown in the last 2 minutes of the game. Right? And if he was beating somebody badly, they didn't look to punish him. Though Bill always said, how come, like that season where they averaged like 35 points a game and they were just crushing everybody, 2008, I think it was, after, no, it wasn't 2008, it was after the year of inflated football. How come you're beating everybody by so much? He says, well, the offense's job is to score points. The defense's job is to stop us. So that's the way I see it. But he wouldn't go into the last 2 minutes looking to push one down.
Oh, I remember a game they scored 51 or 55 points or something like that. And he was scoring in the fourth quarter late in the game. So, you know, he's not immune.
I disagree with that.
No, I don't. I think he ran the score up several times. And I don't think that was even running up the score. They were pushing it in the Patriots' face. And, hey, you know, they'll get theirs. It all what goes around comes around.
Oh, yeah. No doubt.
All right, let's see if we get Steve in here, and you and Steve can figure out what you guys want to talk about. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell back at Scoreboard Central putting stuff together as we speak for tomorrow's North Shore Today, and as well as the upcoming sports reports that Bill has. We're also going to be listening to Christian Hansen tomorrow, the St. John's Prep High School hockey coach. The Prep doing so well, but boy, do they have a rough schedule come up against them. And you'll hear from Coach Hansen tomorrow. Right now, we'll take a break, and we'll come back with Steve Krause, if I can figure this thing out correctly. So please stay with us.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, Executive Sports Editor at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
What's that, Steve?
What? Okay. Is Timothy with us?
All right, we're here. Yes, we're here. Hold on. It took me three tries to dial the right number, but I finally did. And we welcome Steve Krause. Steve, welcome. I hope you're feeling okay, and I hope it's a great new year for you.
It was a really nice new year, Rick. Thank you very much, and I hope yours was the same.
Thank you. Now, we have an open forum tonight, Steve, so I'm going to leave it up to you to decide what you want to throw at us.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm going to probably not deviate too much from what the whole rest of the world's talking about, and that is what Belichick's intentions are for next year. And gleaning from what I heard, and I didn't hear that much, but gleaning from what I heard, he has very deftly put this whole thing on Bob Kraft. You know, one of the first things he said in his confab today was that I'm under contract, you know, and I'm going to work for an organization until I'm told otherwise. What that means to me is you're going to have to push me out. I'm not leaving on my own. I think he really wants to stay, you know, by virtue of his admission that he could probably agree to give up some of his administrative duties to stay and coach. And despite the crummy season, I wouldn't mind having him back. I still think he's better than anybody out there in game planning and all that stuff. I just think he needs somebody to help him pick the players. But, you know, some of his game plans and some of the things he's done to win games have been brilliant, and I would hate to give that up just because he had one really bad year, you know? No, I agree, Steve, and I said that very thing to Rick in our opening remarks. I think Bill is going to force Robert to fire him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he still has the year left, and he knows it, and everybody else knows it. And, again, if you want me, Gunn, you're going to have to find me because, you know, I like it here. I mean, he's got a reputation, and I think this season, record-wise, has left a very bad taste in his mouth. He's very frustrated by what he saw on the field. And is Nick Caserio available? Do we bring him back, you know? I don't know what the status of anybody is, you know, beyond, you know, I just...
Something needs to be done in that department. I just can't see giving up on the guy for one bad year. And, well, two. Last year wasn't so great either. But it wasn't 4-13. I also think you got to be very careful with him because guy has won 6 Super Bowls and been in 9 of them since he got here. This isn't like firing, Bobby Valentine or somebody like that, you know? He certainly brought this franchise to prominence and made it one of the most lucrative franchises in sports. And I don't see where you just, I don't know, I just think that Jerry Jones' method of what he did with Tom Landry after Tom Landry did for the Dallas Cowboys, I just can't see Kraft going that way. So I think this is going to be a real quandary for Kraft if he wants him out. If he wants him to stay, I think they'll agree to do this really quickly. And my own opinion is that they will give him some help with the administrative stuff.
And I think at his age, I think he preferred to get out of that office rut and get out of and stay on the field more because, we know how much he loves to coach and teach. And maybe he's looking at it like, I need to spend more time on the field with the coaches and teach them how to coach.
And teach the players how to play, too. I mean, I think you listen to any of them talk about how he teaches them, and he's got a way about them, I think he's just as nauseating a person as everybody else thinks. But I also think that he's got good qualities, and I think that, you got to give him more than one bad year before you show somebody of this man's accomplishments to the door. I mean, let's face it. If you were athletic director of Swampscott High and Stan Bondalevich went 3-10 after going 9-1 for 5 straight years, would you fire him?
No, of course not.
You'd just chalk it up a bad year, down year, whatever, and you'd take your chances next year. The man has enough pride. It would probably go 9-1 again, and I think Belichick has enough pride that he's going to find a way to get better players in time to have a decent season next year.
I think a lot of these guys that were here this year aren't going to be here next year. They can't play. They've demonstrated that they can't learn the system. And one of the strengths of the team in its Super Bowl runs was his ability to bring in outside players who might have been starting on the backside of their careers, but they still had a lot of talent left. They had incredible intelligence. The players that he brought in, they could adapt to his system. Roman Fiverr, retired. Okay, Roman, listen, we want you to come play for us. Yeah, okay. He just kept picking these guys up, and they said, yeah, I'll come play for you.
Brian Cox was another one.
That's the guy I was just trying to think of. All these guys that came in, you're like, wow. These guys were stars in their day, and, maybe they'll still shine bright. Then they went out there and they won Super Bowls and they made plays. You were like, the reason they're making plays is because they're really smart football players.
I also think, and I don't know how you do this, and I think he's going to stop this nepotism thing with his kids. I mean, I'm sure his son's a good guy and everything, but why should his son bypass everybody else in the coaching carousel to become a defensive coordinator? I think that they're going to have to just stop that and get a real defensive coordinator in there. And if they can't do any better than Bill O'Brien, and I'm not convinced he's the greatest OC who ever lived, then I don't know. But I'll tell you one thing. You get a guy like Mac Jones, who won a national championship at Alabama, which is like playing for a pro coach with Saban. You get somebody like him, and you bring him in, and in 3 years, that kid couldn't start for, you know, Revere High, you know, then I don't think it's on him. I think it's on you and the people you hire to coach him. So I don't know what they're going to do about that. But
you know, it also goes in the players you put around him. You know, at Alabama, he had one of the best offensive lines in the country. He had the best running backs in the country. He had the best receivers in the country. He had the best offense, some of the best offensive players in the country playing around him. So it also probably hit a lot of blemishes on his game because they were all so good. They could help make him look good. He also had, you know, a world-class defense to shut down the opposing offenses. But he still came here. He had a good first year, you know, under Josh. Maybe we can help him get fired. You know? And he's just going to get that kind of organization behind him. And he's got to get skilled players, receivers, running backs not bad. Receivers, maybe they're halfway there. They need a couple more. But the linemen. I would just go out there and draft, like, Washington's offensive line. Just draft every one of them. Washington, draft every one of them. And the ones that you don't get from Washington, get them from Michigan. You know?
If you really look down to brass football tacks, I think one of the big problems with this year's team is that they didn't even have a third down guy that they could depend on. They didn't have a safety valve. You know, somebody who could go out 5 yards, turn around, and catch a pass. You know, they didn't even have that. Never mind deep threats. But they didn't even have short threats. You know, they just didn't have anybody. And I don't, even if you have the best offensive line in the world, I mean, if you don't have one guy on your team that can catch the football, it doesn't matter whether you got five John Hanners out there. And I think that was the biggest issue to me, was they didn't have anybody on that team who can catch the ball. And I think that's just awful. I don't see how you do that. Blocking is something, as a former offensive lineman, if I heard it once, I heard it 1,000 times. Blocking is a question of how much do you want to do it, okay? I mean, if you really want to get your nose broken a few times and you really want to stick your face in there, you can block well enough to play on an offensive line. But people, receivers, they have to have some talent. And I don't know where they went wrong, but they didn't have anybody on that receiving corps who you could count on to catch the ball. And the one guy they did have, they gave away. You know, Jacoby Myers. So
I could not understand that move whatsoever.
But, hey, that's why they were 4-12 or 13. The only other thing I want to say, and I say this with unbridled glee, is that the Miami Dolphins are frauds. And they'll be lucky if they go into Kansas City and win a game. You know, they played an easy schedule. They played in a year where the Patriots were not good and they weren't a threat. You know, they didn't beat anybody of any talent. And the same goes with Dallas. But I watched that game last night absolutely gleeful. If I could get up off the couch and dance around the room, I would have. Because I hate the Dolphins. And believe it or not, for somebody who has to watch them play the Bills twice. I like the Bills. So I was pretty pleased with last night, and I am very happy to be proven right that the Dolphins are frauds. So, anyway.
Well, what else? I'm just wondering, with the playoffs coming up, is there a super team in the NFL, Steve?
No, there is not. I think they're all pretty much, all the good teams are pretty much on the same level. I mean, you look at them all, and I've seen them all play. None of them could go out and, like, beat another, or, you know. I don't think there's going to be too many 38-3s unless Kansas City beats the Dolphins 38-3 or something. But I hope to see some good football. I think, you know, a game between Baltimore and Kansas City would be tremendous. Or Baltimore and Buffalo, or, you know, San Francisco and Dallas. They'd be great games. I mean, it's going to be nip and tuck, you know, all the way through. And I remember that's the best part about watching the playoffs is just to see the drama unfold and see the really good teams play each other. You know, that league is so far flung that, you know, you don't get those games very often. We got one last night. It was tremendous, too. It was one of the best games of the year, Buffalo-Miami. So.
So for a game that didn't produce a tremendous amount of scoring, they sure went up and down the field. And you would have actually thought that there would have been more scoring, the way that they were both chucking the ball around and finding receivers and gaining yards.
Well, if Josh Allen didn't keep throwing the ball to the other team, they probably would have scored more.
That's what I'm saying. You know, it was great between the 20s, but once you got inside of the 20s, it was like toss a coin.
I like the Bills, and I would love to see Josh Allen on my team. But there are times when I just want to go through the TV and just kick him. Because even when he's playing well, he's always good for two or three picks. And like last night, perfect. When a time came for him to shine, he shone. You know, he played some great football in the second half. But boy, in that first half, he couldn't wait to throw the ball the other team. It was awful. But
I got one more quick topic for both of you. Then we got to call Mike. How about Craig Bloom or Chaim Breslow going full throttle?
Oh, I think the biggest problem with the Red Sox is Tom Warner. I think he's the guy that's out on the point now. John Henry has chosen to be invisible for some reason. And Warner's the one that used that full throttle quote. I think he's an idiot. You know, I always thought he was an idiot. Couldn't hang on to Katie Couric. That's I not be able to hang on to Katie Couric. You know, he's the one that came out and said, we're going full throttle. And then, you know, for all we know, Breslow walked in there with the idea that they were going to go full throttle and was told, nuh-uh, we have different definitions of throttle. I don't know. The moaning and groaning about somebody that I only heard of 2 days ago, and that's Teoscar Hernandez. I'm just aghast at the amount of whining that Red Sox fans do. Who is Teoscar Hernandez anyway? You know, I mean, he's a guy. He's probably not even as good as J.D. J.D. Which is Martinez.
Martinez, yeah.
You know, he's got a, I don't know, why are they all moaning and groaning because they didn't sign Teoscar Hernandez? And by the way, it's not T. period Oscar Hernandez either. It's Teoscar Hernandez.
Well, my thing is, guys, is you know, the hierarchy promises one thing, but year after year, this is the third or fourth year in a row, what do? They bring in AA and AAA players, and they give up major leaguers.
Well, whose fault is that? Who's the one that makes these promises?
Oh, that's what I don't know. But all I'm saying is I'm tired of it. Well, so why make them?
It's not Craig Breslow. It's not Chaim Bloom. It's Tom Werner. He's a moron. And I hope he's listening.
Hey, Tim, final thoughts for Steve.
Well, you know, Steve, having a whole lot of money doesn't equate to having a high level of intelligence in terms of something that you assume you know about, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, part owner of the Red Sox. Okay, what have you done for us lately? And I think John Henry has kind of moved across the pond, and I think he's sort of enjoying his time with Liverpool, as they are playing really well right now. And, you know, they're in first place in the Premier League, and they're tearing through the tournaments over there. So he has a lot to be happy with about those guys. I think he's leaving the Red Sox to the fortunes as they may fall with the guys that are here, Kennedy and the rest of them. You got to give them credit for being as optimistic as they are, but that optimism isn't turning into name ball players, quality ball players that are going to light the people, light the fire under the people to make them go pay more for tickets again.
Yeah, I'm starting to hear all kinds of chatter about these guys might be looking to sell the team, and you know they're trying to whittle the payroll down to make it an easier sell. I don't know whether that's true or not, but I don't think that there are too many people in business today that have the money to buy a sports team. You know, in order to do it, you have to join forces like Henry and the idiot there, Warner, and Lucchino did when they bought the Red Sox. And, you know, just to bring in one name before I go, we lost a great one yesterday when it came to somebody like that, and that's Joe O'Donnell. So he would have been the perfect guy for something like that. And as a matter of fact, he tried to buy the team once and didn't work out. One of his partners was Bill Connell, I believe, and Bill passed away before they could ever buy it. And but Joe O'Donnell died yesterday, and I don't know if either one of you have ever heard of him, but he would have been perfect. Local owner, you know, had some money, but would have had to have paired with somebody else. And anyway, I know you got to talk to Mike. Say a big hello and happy New Year to Mike, would you please?
I will, Steve. And thanks for talking tonight. Appreciate it. We should be here next week. And stay healthy, will you?
Will do.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, Steve. Take care.
Hey.
All right. That's Steve Krause, sports writer extraordinaire, also a news writer and news reporter as well. And if you have a chance, you see him on Facebook. He writes a lot of columns that are just so thoughtful and so well done, basically about anything, but for the most part about sports. And speaking of sports, the sports writers, I'm not sure if the Salem News sports writers are going to be here this week. There's been a little bit of a change. We want to congratulate Nick Giannino for becoming the Gloucester Times sports editor. Nick, a familiar face on the Salem Sports Writers podcast, and of course he's been at the Salem News now for, I believe, 6 years, so we congratulate Nick on his taking over at the Gloucester Times. Meantime, we're going to take a break, and we'll come back with Mike Renier. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and of course, Bill Newell, back at Central Headquarters. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right. Did it the first time. Mike Grenier, sports writer extraordinaire 2, is here. And Mike, Steve Krause passes along his best wishes to say hello.
Oh, yeah. I heard him.
And Happy New Year. Yep. Okay.
I heard him, so I right back at him. I hope Steve is doing well for the new year.
All right. Before we get started, we have to do a full disclosure. You and I have been suffering a little. Me, it's some kind of bronchitis or sinusitis or something that's given me a cough and sneezing and all that good stuff. It's not COVID. I've been tested frequently for at least 3 weeks. And so I apologize for clearing my throat on the air. And I know, Mike, you've been battling a little bit of a respiratory problem as well.
Oh, yeah, pneumonia. It went from the flu to pneumonia. So I was downgraded. It was sort of like being in the potential starting lineup for the Celtics and being downgraded.
Okay.
And, you know, on the night when you might have scored 34 points, you know, against the Portland Trailblazers or something.
All right. Well, so we'll get you at least 10 points and 10 rebounds.
Yes.
I got to make one observation to both you gentlemen, then I'll let you have at it. I was just thinking today about the Celtics. I watched them. I've been watching them pretty religiously. And my favorite player was last year Malcolm Brogdon. This year, it has become Drew Holiday. And let me mention this. First of all, he looks like a kid out there. He looks so enthusiastic and so enjoyable to watch how he plays. Secondly, he can score anytime he wants to. Thirdly, he fits into the team concept. And he also has defense like Brogdon did, except I think he's a combination of Brogdon and, get this, Marcus Smart. I think he's a combination.
You know, that's a great Tim, I'd like to get your take on that, too. I think that's a great observation because I love the way he plays in traffic. When he has the ball down low and it looks like he's got no one to pass to or nowhere to shoot it from, all of a sudden he finds an opening, puts it up with his left hand, or he finds Porzingis coming into the lane late or Horford. He's excellent play. That comes from playing for 14 years now. He's had such great experience. There's no situation that he has not faced, and therefore he doesn't panic when he's in traffic. And that's going to take him a long way, and that's going to take the Celtics a long way in the playoffs, I think, because he's just so experienced, and he's just so good with the ball, and he's great at setting up his teammates. He has a knack for defense, like you said, Rick. He's just a great defensive player. Been a phenomenal addition to the team. I kind of like that combination of, like you said, Brogdon and Marcus Smart as an apropos combination.
I didn't realize that he's a 14-year veteran.
Yeah.
But he's that long.
Yeah, went to UCLA. He's 32 years old. But he, like Rick says, he's got the energy of a guy who's in his late 20s or in the peak of his career, like 26, 27, 28 years old. And the way he has just transitioned to the Celtics, it's such a seamless transition. It looks like he's been with Boston for the last 4 or 5 years, playing with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, you know. He wanted to come here. He could have gone to another team, but he felt his best shot at winning a championship, and he's won one with Milwaukee a couple of years ago. He felt his best shot at winning another one would be with the Celtics. So, I give him a lot of credit. He's sticking his neck out there. He could have gone maybe for more money somewhere else, but he's getting to the latter part of his career, and he'd like to win another title, and he feels his best shot is right here in Boston. So he's been a great addition to this team. I just think he's been a phenomenal player, and I know that you could tell that Tatum and Jaylen Brown enjoy playing with him because of the way that he distributes the ball. Porzingis, all the guys who benefit from his passing game, really appreciate that type of play, a veteran presence on the floor. Pat Connaughton of the Bucks told me that he's a tremendous locker room influence as well. You can't discount that these days. Tremendous locker room influence. Real positive guy. So that was a great pickup by Brad Stevens and the Celtics.
You know, like one of the things when you pick up a really quality player, like Holiday, is are they going to be willing to subjugate their game, as you know, and maybe what they initially thought of, they could expand their game going to another team, signing as a free agent somewhere else, and realizing the team that you've already got there, and saying, how do I best fit into this team? What can I do that makes this team better? And he's obviously done that, because we've all seen in the past guys who come in and that they've got this attitude about themselves that they want to be the be-all and end-all, and all the only thing they end is a chance of actually doing anything with the team and the team's chances of being successful. But he's
right.
Come in, and it's been seamless, his integration into the team. Like, he knows when to take a shot. He knows when to go to the hoop. He's a fierce rebounder. He's not afraid to get into the mix, keeping
yep.
balls alive, going to the floor. All the things we associate with being a diehard Celtic, he's shown everybody in the first half of this season.
Right, and Tim, you know, that's a great point as well. The thing I like about him, I think when he joined the Celtics, he realized he wasn't going to have to average 19, 20, 21 points a game. He knew that Jaylen Brown could do that. He knew that Jason Tatum could do that. And when you look at what he's done, he's averaging 12.8, okay, with 13 points a game. He's shooting 41% on threes, which is very impressive. That's one of the better shooting percentages around the league for a point guard, 41% on threes. And he's shooting nearly 46% overall. And because of his ability to facilitate and distribute the ball, you know, right now you got the Celtics, you got Tatum averaging 27.5. You got Jaylen Brown at almost 23 points a game. You have Porzingis basically at 20 points a game. And you have Derek White, who's probably having his best year, averaging 16.5. So, you know, you got five guys right there who on a given night can give you anywhere from 15 to 30. And that makes defending the Celtics really tough. And that's why they're the top-rated offensive team. And also, too, they've made a commitment to defense. I believe they're ranked number 3 overall in defense. So, therefore, they've put the whole package together, and that's why they have the best record in the league right now, you know. So, they have a lot going for them. You know, if they can just avoid the injuries here, they're in good shape as they had almost at the halfway point. Tim, are almost at the 41-game mark, and they you know, they're just playing extremely well.
Yeah, it's fun to watch. They're on now. I said, turn them on early, see what the score is. Go, okay, I can wait a while to go back. And in most cases, you go back and the lead is expanded. You know? And now, okay, let's keep expanding it. Let's not take the foot off the pedal. You know, I was looking at it. I was online on ESPN, and there was a conversation with one of the former Celtics who said, you know, the big difference with Larry Bird is Larry Bird had you down. He never took his foot off your neck.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
And that was the truth. They never let up on you. If they had you by 10, they wanted you by 20.
Right, exactly. And I think that's the way you have to play the game, even the regular season, because you want the team to remember you if you meet him again in the playoffs.
Mike, did you read the story on Brad Stevens in the Globe this week?
Did not see it, but the one that comes to mind for me in the last week, Rick, and I'd like to get your comment on, is Gordon Hayward
yes.
commenting that
the Celtics
had the ability and the talent to win the title 4 years ago, I believe it was, but that's the year they had Kyrie Irving and Marcus Morris, who was a very good player. He thought he should have been top dog, and Gordon Hayward laid it out there and said everyone had their own agenda, and that's the reason that we didn't win that year. And I love the fact that Tatum came back and said, I agree with what Gordon Hayward said.
Right, and so did Jaylen Brown.
Yeah.
And the Brad Stevens interview is connected to that, and what Stevens said, and I can't remember the exact phrasing, but I want you and Tim to chime in on this if you want to. He said something like, before, it was players coming in and, you know, could they integrate with the Celtics and make a sacrifice?
Yeah.
And he says, now the attitude is not sacrifice, it's how do I contribute to the team? And that's a huge mindset difference.
Yeah, it is. It is. You know, Brad Stevens did a good job as the coach, but I think at some point, particularly that year, maybe he lost control a little bit, Rick, because that team certainly had the talent to win it all. And Gordon Hayward's not one to be, like, talking up a storm and making negative comments. He had to feel deep down that they had a really outstanding talent pool, enough to win a championship, but they fell short because of their individual agendas.
Mm-hmm.
So it's too bad because you don't get that many chances to win a championship and to have a championship.
Yeah, but he's contrasting that to this year's team.
Right. Right, right. And this year's team, I think, Rick, one guy we need to talk about, Tim, I'd love to hear your take on this too, is how much of a leadership role Jason Tatum has taken. Like, I've seen him, I think, in certain games, Rick, especially when some of his teammates are out with injuries, where he just, even a couple of games where he was questionable to play because of injury or illness, he has gone out and played and gotten anywhere from 30 to 38 points. The other night was a perfect example, 38 points and 14 rebounds when Porzingis got hurt early into the game. And he's done that on many occasions tonight where he's kind of like the old Cedric Maxwell line, get on, climb on my back, boys. I think you're getting more and more of that from Jason Tatum. He wants that leadership role. He wants to win a title. He badly wants to be in that pantheon of championship Celtics players. You know, even guys who won it once, like Kevin Garnett. He wants to be up there with like a Paul Pierce and a Kevin Garnett and win at least one championship and hopefully more. But I've seen more leadership from him this year than any other season. I've seen him play some phenomenal games where he's taken over the game in the fourth quarter, or he's played well from end to end, from the very first minute of the game till the 48th minute. So I'm liking what I'm seeing from Jason Tatum a lot. Tim, what do you think of that one?
You know, when you mentioned that, Mike, what I'm watching him now is his demeanor.
Mm-hmm.
He has a much more mature demeanor about going about his job, of getting into the play, of attacking the basket, of defending. I mean, we haven't seen him defend like he has, and even going after rebounds.
Yes, he's rebounding better than he ever has, Tim. He's rebounding better. Yeah.
And we all know rebounding is a mindset. You've got to want to go get the ball, whether it's on the offensive or the defensive board. You've got to want to go get it. You got to be willing to go up there and, you know, smack a few bodies and get smacked yourself, and challenge and keep the ball alive, or get the ball and get it out quickly to your up man. And he certainly has done that this year. But I just always know during the game there's just a seriousness about his game. And
yep.
It's like he's processing everything that's in front of him. And what's the best way to attack it? It's not, what's the best shot can I take? It's, what's the best option that I have here? And you know he's a best scorer. He's capable
yep.
of getting 30, plus, as he has shown. But he's also giving it up. More,
and he's also
more
liking,
than he has ever in his career.
Yeah, he's also liking when his teammates make a big play. In other words, he's making it a point, whether he's sitting out for a couple minutes on the bench or he's out on the court to, you know, if Luke Kornet, for example, makes a great play, he's the first one to go over and congratulate him. Guys off the bench, he's congratulating. To me, that's a sign of leadership. That's the type of thing Larry Bird used to do as well. So we're seeing, like you said, maturity, Tim, is the perfect word. He's showing more maturity than he has in previous seasons. And we can't forget Jaylen Brown either. We still get me upset with all the turnovers he makes and all the free throws he misses, but he's made some crazy shots this year, and he's been taking it to the basket and scoring some acrobatic drives, and you could tell he wants to win as well. So, you know, when those two guys are on the same page, Brown and Tatum, they're already, you know, a good way towards a victory. And then when you add in Porzingis and the other guys and Holiday and all that stuff, it's been a really good drive towards first place here. And, you know, just a week or so ago, they were only a half a game up on the Milwaukee Bucks in the Eastern Conference. So also, too, the Philadelphia 76ers are up there. But now they've created some distance between the contenders in the Eastern Conference. So it shows you how consistent the Celtics are.
You know, one more Jason Tatum observation, guys. I watched him a couple of games when he got jobbed by the refs.
Yes.
And those are games where he would just go berserk generally. And each game I've seen him do that, he walks away. You can see that he's frustrated. And then when there's a timeout, he'll go over and talk to the ref calmly.
Right.
Have you noticed that?
Yes, I certainly have. Right. That business of throwing up his arms when he didn't get calls, he's still doing it a little bit, but much less than he used to. And like you said, he'll wait till a timeout to make his point with an official, which a lot of good players do. A lot of good players wait till a timeout, and they'll want an explanation from an official. They don't want to show up an official while the ball's in play. So, but they'll talk to him during a timeout. So, yeah, that's another sign of what Tim said, maturity. Like Tim said, it's another sign of his maturity.
All right, what else you got, Mike?
Well, should we do a Power Five, and you guys could even comment on it? I mean, you know.
yeah.
Let's go with the Power Five.
Can I break in before you do that?
I'm sorry?
Can I break in just for a moment?
Yes, absolutely, of course.
It's in memoriam. Good friend of mine played baseball with him at Salem State, and afterwards in the North Shore Professional League for several years after we were out of college. Tremendous ball player, tremendous baseball player, a good basketball player. Mike Soper of Salem passed away last week at the age of 70.
And, awful.
I just remember what a quality guy he was.
Yep.
And tremendous ball player. We were at Salem State at the same time. He was captain his senior year. Our first 2 years playing with a tremendously talented team. We won the MASCAC championship. We had a down third year. But again, Mike was there and just a tremendous person, a tremendous ball player, and I just wanted to remember him.
That's a fine tribute, Tim. That's it. Guys like that, the thing about guys like that is that they have such an impact on throughout the North Shore community because most of them stuck around, whether they coached at the youth level or the high school level or just in their own neighborhood with kids. People like that were highly influential in their communities and throughout the North Shore, and that's what I always loved about guys like you're talking about. They stuck around, and they had a huge impact in their community.
Yep, he did. He really, really did. And he worked at Moynihan Lumber down in Beverly for decades, and knowing that he worked, I made it a point when I was buying things during my renovation, I went down and I talked to Mike because I knew I was going to get a straight shot. It's always good to go back and say hi to him and reminisce a bit. But he will be missed. He will be missed.
Oh yeah, people like that are always missed, Tim. There's no doubt about it. And we lose too many of them these days, I guess. You know.
Yep.
All right. Well, this seems inconsequential, I guess, in comparison. But just before we go off the air here, I'll give you what I feel Power Five based on what's been happening in the past. Of course, we had through the holidays, so the past several weeks, teams that have picked up the pace and teams that have fallen off a little bit. So the Minnesota Timberwolves, still number one in the Western Conference, but they're number five in my Power Five because they've only won five of their last 10 games, and they've dropped off in terms of the way they play. They play the Celtics on Wednesday, so they have a chance to improve there, but to me, they've dropped off a bit. So, and then I got to go with Philadelphia at the number four spot. They were right behind the Celtics for a while, but now they're like five games behind the Celtics. So I got to go with them at the number four spot. The Milwaukee Bucks, who were also hovering just over the Celtics, they're 6-4 in their last 10. They're 3.5 back of the Celtics, whereas, like I said, maybe 10 days ago, they were like half a game behind them.
Wait a minute, I missed that one. Who was it, Mike?
Milwaukee Bucks.
Okay, yep.
Three spot.
Yep.
The team that I liked all along, all of a sudden playing tremendous basketball, Denver Nuggets, last year's champions, number two spot, Rick, because if you saw a stretch, I saw Jokic the other night hit a half-court shot at the buzzer
to win
the game.
He's an alien.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. He's a great passer, definitely the best passing big man I've seen since the Larry Bird era, just a great passer, a great team player. And he went through a stretch of four games where he hit 39 of his 44 field goal attempts. 39 of 44. That's pretty difficult to do, but he did it, and that's the way he plays every night. So they're number two, and of course the Celtics with a 28-7 record are number one. So that's the way I see it at this point. And another five or six games, we're at the halfway mark.
What do you think? How do you think that Power Five is going to change? And I'll ask Tim the same question, because those teams, they've basically been in the Power Five most of the year so far. They've just kind of changed places. And how do you see this thing? Because I think the Timberwolves were just playing out of their minds. But
yes, they were.
The Sixers, the Bucks, and the Nuggets. Well,
Oklahoma City too, Rick. I think Oklahoma City Thunder.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
You know, they've sort of been in and out of the Power Five. And they remain a very good team. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, probably the best unknown, because he plays in Oklahoma City, and you can get tickets for $7. He's not a very well-known player, although obviously his peers know him. But he can get you anywhere from 30 to 40 points in the game, and they have some nice complementary players. And the guy that didn't play at all last year because he was injured as a rookie, Holmgren, who came out of Gonzaga 2 years ago as a number one pick, was injured all of last season. He's averaging somewhere between 18 and 20, and he's like a legitimate, a little bit like a Porzingis, a skinny 7'2" guy who can score. So he's added to that team. So they're going to be sort of a team to look out for in the playoffs. And I got to mention the Miami Heat. They're hanging around. They're just 20 and 15. They're nowhere near the Power Five right now. But come the playoffs, Jimmy Butler will be, all of a sudden, will be healthy. Tyler Hero, who missed 15, 20 games, he's healthy again. Duncan Robinson can still hit the three. Adebayo, the big center who missed 9 or 10 games with injury, he's back. And, of course, they have the great Eric Spoelstra as coach. So it's kind of just like sort of in the background right now. But I feel that come playoff time, they will be a huge factor. And you know what? I also have to give Tom Thibodeau and the Knicks credit because they're just 5 or 6 games over 500. But on a given night, they can knock off the top team in the NBA because Jalen Brunson has improved that much as a point guard.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with any of that. Where they're going to end up? Because one, it's a long season. We don't know who's going to end. Like you say, Mike, who's going to end up getting hurt? Who's going to end up coming back? Those who come back, how much are they going to be able to contribute? And you know, I love the Celtics' chances. I just hope Porzingis holds up. I think he's the key for them because he's made such a difference offensively, defensively, rebounding.
Yeah.
You know, he'll take the outside shot and with the ability to make it, but he's also such a great passer, both outside and inside. I think he'd be the one guy you don't want to lose for the Celtics.
I agree, Tim. I love his game. And, of course, he's part of that core five that starts. I love the fact that they have, I think, you know, Rick, we mentioned Tatum's leadership. And based on the Gordon Hayward story, I believe he got the top six players together this year and said, only five of us can start. All six of us are capable of being in the starting five, but only five of us can start. How are we going to handle this in a productive, assertive, and positive way? I thought that was a very mature thing to do. He didn't want to hurt anybody's ego, saying that one of us is going to be sitting on the bench, whether it's Horford or Porzingis or Derek White or whatever, but you got to be satisfied with that role because you can still know you're playing a lot of sixth man, or when somebody's banged up, you become a starter.
Everything you guys have said about Tatum tonight, I've been waiting for, and it's actually coming a little bit earlier than I expected it.
Yeah, I mean, he's just, to me, he's taking that next step forward to be a leader, and you know what? When you look at the MVP race, I hate those individual awards most of the time. You're still going to talk Embiid and Jokic and all that, but you'd have to have Tatum in the conversation because the Celtics have the best record in the NBA. They're on a pace to win 62 or 63 games, so you'd have to have him in that conversation of the MVP.
Well, what I want you and Tim to do is put down five selections between now and the next time we meet or whatever as to who you think the MVP will be, and then we'll check it at the end of the year.
All right. Now, I have a riddle for you to end this tonight. Which team won the Adam Silver in-season tournament?
Indy.
No. The Lakers, right?
Oh, the Lakers. Of course. Yes.
We've all forgotten.
Indy beat the Celtics.
The Lakers have now won.
I know.
Three of their last 12 games.
You know, when that was happening, I was thinking of the Home Run Derby. Because how many guys, Tim, have won the Home Run Derby and then collapsed for the rest of the year?
Good. It's the worst thing you could possibly do, because in order to win the Home Run Derby, you have to change the total dynamics of the mechanics of your swing. And it's once you get that into your mind, you take that after the Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game, and that stays with you for the foreseeable future. It's how you're swinging the ball. You're looking to drive the ball. You've changed all of your base mechanics from your feet to your hips, to your weight distribution, to your hands, to your eye level, and you're totally screwed up. It really does you no good.
Well, that's my analogy for the Lakers.
Sure. That's right. And no one even remembers they won that tournament. They put up the flag
right.
And all that stuff before their fans. It's such a joke. And now the Lakers are struggling so much that they're talking about Darvin Ham, who's the head coach, has lost the team in the locker room and all that stuff. And yet, you know, this silly tournament they play, they put so much importance on it. At least the commissioner did. It's a fraudulent thing. That's my final point.
Well, I agree, and what Tim said.
Interest early in the year.
And what Tim said, I think, can be applied to that. That's how I look at it. I looked at a home run derby, like putting all this effort in to win this silly thing, and then what does it do to your team for the rest of the year? So
that's right. And Tim, you're right. A lot of great hitters went on to have poor second halves because they've changed their mechanics for the home run derby.
Yep.
All right, boys. I'm happy that we're back. And semi-healthy, we're going to get better, Mike.
We will.
Okay.
Healthy the next week. I'm not showing up because I don't want to get infected.
Oh, geez. Oh, my God. It doesn't travel through the telephone, Tim.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Let me tell you.
Tim, I've got a mask on my microphone, so I think you're okay.
All right.
All right. Hey, Mike, thanks so much, man. I appreciate it. Happy New Year to you and your beautiful wife, and we'll talk to you guys later.
Thank you guys so much. Tim and Rosario, I'm sorry for the loss of your friends.
Thank you, Mike.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay, Mike, take care.
Take care.
All right, that's Mike Grenier. And Tim, what Mike said too, I didn't know you guys were so close, and that hurts because when you look in the paper like that, it's like it's almost like you become unstuck in time. You go back through the years very quickly.
Oh, I opened up the paper. It was last Wednesday. You know, going through to make sure I wasn't in it, and there was my picture, and I stopped dead in my tracks.
Yeah,
I went, oh my God, you know, and. Because he used to attend the Moynihan soiree.
Yep.
And, as a former employee of Moynihan and all, but also because he was part of the North Shore Athletic family, and it was always great seeing him. Always great catching up, and you know, I hadn't seen his wife Kitty in such a long time, but I brought along a picture of the 1973 Sims State baseball team, and I'm kneeling in front of Mike, oddly enough, and I said, you know, I said, can you find him? She had a little bit of trouble because his hair was a whole lot longer back then.
Well, we look a little different from the 70s.
Oh, boy.
The other thing is, Tim, and I know we've run long here, but I think it's so important that you do mention someone like Mr. Soper. And since we've been doing this, I mean, I've been working with, well, I won't tell you how long with Bill, but I've been doing this since about 1976 when I started with Hockey Night in Boston. And it's so important to learn that the parents of kids who are so supportive and then who were athletes themselves, and then the kids become parents of athletes and they're so supportive, and it's a continuum. And it's one of the good things. It's one of the really good things about living around here, especially the way things are nationally, internationally, and who knows, in the whole solar system. But it's really important that these local and the other thing is, you know, when these teams go to the tournament, then Gloucester starts rooting for who's in the tournament. Marblehead, Beverly, they'll root for any team locally that's in the tournament, and everybody supports one another. And it's a small part of life, but it sticks with you.
Spoiler alert, Michigan is up 7-0 early in the game.
Oh, you son of a gun. All right. All right, we can switch over to the TV now. Hey, Tim, thank you so much, man. I'm glad you and Medium are doing well, and we'll talk next week.
All right, brother, we'll talk to you then.
All right, Coach, thanks so much. Take care. All right, that's Tim Kearns, our sports analyst and ambassador of goodwill. My thanks to Steve Krause and Mike Grenier, and I hope we can keep this going for a long time. I don't know if anybody else is listening, but we sure enjoy talking sports. And again, it's the thing that brings the entire North Shore, when you talk sports, into your backyard. It's a local thing, so we appreciate your participation. Let people know about it. All right, that'll take care of it. Don't forget to check in to MSO News Sports as frequently as you can, because Bill and I try to update this as much as we can, both with North Shore News and with North Shore Sports, in interviews, pictures, photos, and everything. And don't forget North Shore Today. It's our daily news magazine, along with North Shore Today podcast, our newscast. We have a lot of exclusive interviews every single day that come from North Shore newsmakers. So on behalf of Bill and Tim, I'm Rick Moore, wishing you a very pleasant good night, good evening, be well, happy new year, be well, be safe, and do the right thing.